Good evening and welcome to the fifth aliyah of Kiseitse, which gives us a special synergy opportunity. It's a very brief aliyah, but it's very packed for us, and it gives us a special opportunity of unusual synergy. Now, often at the beginning of the Zman, we have some kind of synergy because it's not uncommon that these parshios contain some kind of relationship to whatever Masechta we're beginning, and we have the opportunity to connect that. Here, it's the week before the Zman, which starts next week, and this Aliyah gives us the opportunity to chazer, essentially, the Masechta that we learned last year. So right before we start the new Zman, we have the synergy of being able to reflect upon Masechta's Gittin that we learned last year, so that's a very special synergy opportunity. In this very brief Aliyah, which is only a few psukim long, but it gives us quite a bit. But before getting to Gittin, so we first have two psukim that talk about a completely different subject. So we'll just begin with that. The pasuk begins here, pasuk chav hey, ki savo becherem reyacha. So when you come into your neighbor's vineyard, and here the context is you're not coming in stam, you're coming to work. That's the idea. As Nitziv points out, it must be that you're coming to work, because otherwise you wouldn't even be allowed to look in your neighbor's vineyard. You have a halacha of hezek re'iyah and vayin hara. A few years ago, we learned Bava Basra, so we know about that. So you wouldn't otherwise even be looking in your neighbor's vineyard. But here you are working in your neighbor's vineyard. So the Torah gives a careful balance in terms of the rights of workers and the rights of the balabatim. So there is a permission given to the worker to eat while he's working. He can eat from the grapes of the vineyard. V'achalta anavim k'nafshecha savach, however many you need to eat in order to be full. But al kal yecha lo sitein, so it's like a restaurant that has a policy of all you can eat. But of course, then you can't take to go, so you can't put anything to take away. You're only allowed to eat what you can eat at the time. And this din of Re'echa, so the Gemara has a few meyutim, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, on Daf Pezayin and Mibes, where the Gemara has a lot of the halachas of laborers, so Poelim. So the Gemara has a meyut here. This doesn't apply to Hekdish. If you're working for Hekdish, so then you're not allowed to eat at all. And also, it doesn't apply if you're working for an Akum. So what does that mean? If you're working for Akum, you can't apply. It doesn't apply. So it sounds like from the Shach, the Shach in Choshen Mishpat in Shin Lamed Zayin, that means that you can't eat at all, that there's no license given for you to take. But it sounds like from the Gemara a little differently. It sounds like the opposite way. It sounds like from the Gemara it means that you can put it in the Kli. So apparently the understanding is that it's not considered to be Gazel, that that's the nature of the relationship, and that the Pasuk is telling you the Chiddush the other way. So one way or another, whether the Miyut is in one direction or the other, the Pasuk is reflecting a specific balance that reflects an understanding between two Jews. When you have a Jewish worker and a Jewish owner, that there's an understanding that the worker is allowed to eat to keep him satisfied while he's working, but he can't take to go. And that's the default understanding. These halachas, halachas of Poelim, so the Gemara tells us actually that the halacha actually comes last, which sounds funny, but there are a couple of stages of possibility. So the halacha comes last, meaning that ideally when you have a relationship between a worker and a laborer, so the halacha tells us what to do if you have no other way of knowing what the assumption is between the worker and the laborer, the worker and the balabas, the worker and the employer. But if there's a minig of that locale, so then that minig is going to tell us how they should be treated in terms of when the worker should show up and what the nature of the understanding of the expectations are. So if there's a minig, so then that's going to replace the dinim that the Gemara tells us. And better than that is if there's an explicit arrangement between the boss and the worker, what should be. So then if you have an explicit arrangement, so that'll tell you what they're allowed to do. So if the boss were to say, in this case, that you can eat as much as you want, and you can take as much as you want, and you can bring home for your family, so of course the boss has the right to do that. But when there's no explicit agreement, then you need another system. So the Torah is telling us here what the basic understanding of the balance of the relationship is when you have two Jews, how the relationship is balanced. So there are many such dinim in the Gemara, and general rule is that the halacha comes last. So if you have the explicit agreement, so then that will regulate how they treat each other. If you don't have an explicit agreement, so then maybe there's a minhag. If there's no minhag, so then there are rules. So here, there's a rule that tells us what the expectation is, and apparently it doesn't apply under certain circumstances. It doesn't apply if there's a field of an akum, and what that means, we see, is one implication in the Gemara, and the Shach understands it in the other direction. So the Pasuk says, V'achalta, you're allowed to eat. That same Gemara over there says also, it means eating specifically, but you can't suck the juice out of the grape. And the Torah Tamima explains that here, that's because again, there's a specific balance of what you're doing here. You're allowed to nourish yourself, but not too much at the expense of the Baal HaBayis. And if you're going to eat in this inefficient way, that you're sucking the juice out of the grape, that means you are wasting too much of the Baal HaBayis's resources here, and that's not appropriate. And here the Pasuk says also, anavim, v'achalta anavim, you can eat the grapes. So once again, the Gemara has a drasha, but not with other things. And the Torah Tamima comments on that also, that if you're going to add stuff to it, then you'll come to eat more, which is also an interesting point that the psychology of food has addressed, that are you going to come to eat more? There's a whole science about how they make you eat more by adding all kinds of additives to the food. So that's the concern here, that if you're going to add things to the grapes, so then you're going to go beyond what you need for your nutritional needs. And once again, that's going to upset the balance. And that also seems to be what's indicated in the next pasuk. Pasuk says, Kisavo bekamas riecha, when you come into the standing grain of your neighbor, v'katafta melilos yadecha, so you can pluck the ears with your hand, but you can't use a sickle. And that idea of using a sickle, so here, as the Netziv comments, that this is an additional iser beyond what you see in the grapevine, because if you're going to use a sickle to cut off just a little bit that you need to eat, so then you're again going to end up taking more, and once again, that's going to upset the balance, and that's not appropriate. Okay, so these two psukim, that ends the parak, and this next parak now, parak of Dalid, so this teaches us about Gittin. So this next pasuk essentially contains all of the dinim, or many of the dinim, that are found in Maseches Gittin. So to see how many we can try to summarize in the next few minutes. So first the pasuk tells us, just to read the whole pasuk once, and we'll try to see some of the dinim that come out of it. Ki yikach ishisha uva Allah. So a man marries a woman, and he has a relationship with her. And now he doesn't like her anymore. He has found something wrong with her. We'll have to see what that means. He writes her a bill of divorce. And he gives it into her hand. And he sends her out of her house. And then the next pasuk is going to say there's more to the story. But before we get to that, so this pasuk by itself tells us all about Gittin, and the pasuk afterwards goes beyond this. So, first of all, is this telling us a mitzvah? So, it seems like yes, most of the Moni HaMitzvos count this as a mitzvah, but the question is, what do we mean by that? When you count this Gerushin as a mitzvah, so is this a normal mitzvah, like a mitzvah as an obligation, as something that you do? So clearly, it's not a mitzvah in the sense of lulav or tzitzis, it's not an obligation kind of mitzvah. But even within that, so there are a couple of possibilities. So the Rambam, for example, the way the Rambam lists it, it sounds like it's more of a parsha. It sounds like essentially the Torah is describing that when a person chooses to divorce, so this is how he should do it. He should do it specifically with a get. And it doesn't sound like there is any active mitzvah to divorce. While from others, it sounds like in some circumstances, it may be that there is a mitzvah to divorce. Clearly, That's not the default position, but that there may be circumstances where there is a mitzvah to divorce. So it could be related a little bit also to the Tamei HaMitzvos. And if you look at the way the Rambam explains the Mor Nevuchim, so this relates to what the Rambam writes about the mitzvah of marriage. So when it comes to the mitzvah of marriage, we also read about in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, so the Rambam understands that the mitzvah of marriage is in order to create commitment, that when somebody has a relationship, somebody wants to enter into a physical relationship with a woman, so it's not right that he should just do that without any sense of commitment. That's the way it used to be before Matan Torah. And then the Torah came along and said that this can only happen in the context of commitment. So therefore, that was what was enacted with the whole concept of Kiddushin, that there should be an expression of seriousness. That's what the Kinyan Kiddushin is. It is a way of conveying seriousness and creating that commitment. And together with that, so the way the Rambam describes the Mor Nevuchim, so Gerushin is also about that, that if we're going to have a concept of divorce, so it's got to be something serious and public, and it can't be that a person can just claim to be divorced and there's no process and there's no public awareness of that, because that's not going to be very conducive to seriousness and to commitment and the stability of a family. So if that's the case, so we could understand why there's an emphasis on the process and the idea that there should be a safer krisus, and the idea that that should be the mitzvah and that should be what's being emphasized, we can understand. And that's perhaps the Rambam's position here. While others, it could be that the idea is that there is sometimes a value specifically in gerushin. So it could be that if the wife is particularly damaging to the household, so then there is a mitzvah of gerushin. And it could be also overall that it has to do with protecting the value of marriage. So the Sefer Achinuch, even though his language is very much like the language of the Rambam's language essentially is that kishiyirtze legarish, when one wants a divorce, that he should do so with a get, which conveys the idea that he doesn't see it as a affirmative mitzvah, but rather when one is doing it, this is how to do it. The Sefer Achinuch copies that language, but then he goes on to discuss reasoning, which does indicate that there is a value to divorce when necessary. And he explains that sometimes if there's no possibility of divorce, so then people take the existence of the marriage for granted, and then the marriage essentially loses all of its power and loses all of its strength because the spouses know that there's no possibility of it ending. And he's critical of other religions where divorce isn't a possibility. So essentially, he is understanding that it has to be there as something which can make marriage stronger. And the Bravanel, in his commentary here, also has a similar idea that he says that the notion of marriage as a value, marriage is a tremendous value, but it can only have that possibility if it's able to be everything it can be. And sometimes if there's a relationship that doesn't have that potential, so then it has to be allowed to be cleared away in order to protect for and to preserve the possibility of a marriage that can fulfill the potential of what a relationship can be. So both of them seem to understand that in addition to the idea that the wife might be harmful to the spirituality of the family, if that's the kind of person she is, but also in order to protect the possibility of marriage, so then there may be a value of divorce under some circumstances, and that could be what is being referred to here as well. So it could be that we have different understandings of what we might mean when we talk about a mitzvah of divorce in this context, and it could be that there are different circumstances and different applications. So it's also relevant that the whole language here of so what exactly does that mean? So here there is a Mishnah in the end of Gittin, so to go to the end of the Masechta, so in Daf Tzadi, Mishnah has three opinions what that means, and the opinion of Beis Shammai is that it's specifically Dvar Erva, and the opinion of Beis Hillel is Afilu Hichdicha Tafshilo, that even if she burnt his dish, that's the literal interpretation, you have to see if that's really what it means, and the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that Afilu Matza Acheres Nahimana, that even if he found someone more beautiful than her, so then that could justify a divorce. So it's hard to read all those opinions in one sense, because they don't seem to work together. Because if you want to say that maybe it's talking about when there is a mitzvah to divorce, so then if Beis Shammai's opinion prevails, okay, so we could understand if there's a Dvar Erva, that might be a situation where there's a mitzvah to divorce, but then the other two opinions don't seem to fit with that. So it could be, as some suggest, that maybe that's what the Machlokas is. Maybe the question is, how do you relate to a mitzvah of divorce? Do you mean that it is a situation which is sometimes an obligation, and maybe that's what Beis Shammai is referring to? Or is it saying that it's a situation which is not an obligation, but it's just a possibility, and that's what Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are referring to? So that could also be. So first of all, when Beis Shammai says Dvar Erva, does he mean literally erva, where maybe you would say there is a literal obligation to divorce, although even that's not 100% clear if there's an actual chiyuv of divorce in that case, even though they're asuru to each other, not allowed to be together anymore, but the Tosfos and Zvachim understand it doesn't mean there's an actual chiyuv to divorce. That was a whole discussion of itself. But even if that's the case, so is that what it means, that there's an actual arayos? So Netziv writes in his commentary here that ervas davar doesn't necessarily literally mean actual arayos. Dvar erva means something ervish, essentially, something in the spirit of erva, but not necessarily erva mamish. That's what it would have said. Although the girsa that the Yerushalmi has in the Mishnah actually does say just erva. So that's in itself something to consider. But the other opinions, which are on a different level, are itself something to figure out exactly what would be going on. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his commentary over here, and then you point to, so he understands that these are not reasons for divorce, but these are essentially simanim. These are essentially red flags. So, for example, Rabbi Akiva's opinion of Matzah Charis Na'imana, that a person should feel that his wife is the most beautiful woman in the world, he shouldn't be thinking about anyone else, and he shouldn't feel like they're on separate teams. So the idea of she burnt the food, it's her fault, and she's on a separate team from him. So that's a feeling that they're working at odds with each other. And that's a siman that there's something wrong with a relationship. And that's what's telling you that there's going to be a period, there's going to be a separation. In that vein, so there are others who also comment that clearly there's got to be something more to these phrases. So first of all, hikdicha tafshilo presumably doesn't just mean that she burnt his dish because she got distracted and left the food in the oven too long because she was taking care of the kids and she was doing other things and it was an accident. But some understand specifically tafshilo, that she spitefully burnt his dish, that she makes sure everyone else's food comes out perfect, but she's trying to hurt him, so she specifically burns his meal and nobody else, that there's that kind of a relationship problem of a deeper level. Others understand the Torah Tumimah comments also that you find elsewhere, that this whole idea of hechtich tavshilo is often a euphemism for going off the derech, for spiritual problems, for other kind of things. It could be that that's what's being referenced here. He also says in general that it could be that all of these ideas are just possibly cover stories, that if the only reason there could be a divorce was because of a little literal dvar erva, so then you can imagine any time there was divorce, the kind of gossip that would be going on, the kind of scandals that would happen. So the fact that there are lower bars for divorce, so that means that it doesn't have to necessarily start such rumor mills every time there's divorce, even though it's not necessarily so effective. But perhaps that's the reason why you have all these possibilities. But in any event, so the idea that tichticha tefshilo probably means something least more spiteful than it sounds. And the idea of Matzah Charis Na'imanu, in the same spirit of what Rebakov says, doesn't necessarily mean that she wasn't the top contestant in the beauty contest, but it meant that he's not focused on her, that he's not giving her the attention that she deserves. And in that sense, maybe it's actually less surprising than it sounds in terms of who's talking here, that Rabbi Akiva, of all people, you would think that he was the Baal HaMaimer of Yehav Tlarecha Kamocha Zekla Gadol Batara, so you'd be surprised that he's the one who's saying that this is a justification. Matzah Charis Na'imana, of all people, to say that, you wouldn't think that he'd be the one. But maybe adarabba, that he has such a high standard for the type of ava that one should be expressing towards his wife, that if this is the way he's thinking, so he's not treating her properly, and especially in light of the fact that the Gemara in Kedushin and Daf Mem Aleph talks about that pasuk of Yehav Tlarecha Kamocha, Rabbi Akiva's favorite pasuk, as applied specifically to the attitude one has towards his wife, meaning that same din that applies to everyone is also what has the obligation that a man should appreciate his wife in the more intense form. So it's that same mitzvah, but it's on a sliding scale. So maybe it fits that Rabbi Akiva should say that that same pasuk that he holds so dearly is telling us that one has to have a higher level of appreciation for his wife, and if he is not focused on her and he's distracted by other people, so then he's not treating her properly, and maybe that's what he's getting at her. In any event, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't accept his opinion, but perhaps that's a way to understand what he's coming from. And if that's the case, if there are other interpretations of these opinions, so then to go back to the idea that they're arguing about whether we're talking about a mitzvah of an obligatory sense or of at least a affirmative sense in some way, or whether it's just a possibility of divorce, so that has a little bit more room to express itself. Rav Schwab has an interesting comment over here where he notes that clearly, for example, Rabbi Akiva's position that for somebody to divorce based on matzah cheres nahimana, that clearly would not be the right thing to do. But this is an example, and he lists off a few examples of where you find this, that there are times where the Torah wants you to take the initiative and go above and beyond, and therefore Davka sets the bar very low so that you can show that you are beyond that. So the possibility exists of divorce even with this very low threshold, so that the person of higher character won't do that, will be beyond that, and will be on a higher level. And he has a few examples of where he feels the Torah is conveying that message, and this is one of them. Is a very interesting interpretation. The Levush has a position also based on this pasuk, which was a das yachid of an extreme nature, a very fascinating position. The Levush thought that the phrase "imsloy simsachein ve'enav" is crucial to the whole viability of a get, that a get only works if indeed he doesn't like her anymore. But if he still loves her and he wants to divorce her for another reason, so for example, the Gemara talks about a person who's about to die and he's afraid that his wife is going to be in a situation of yibum. So he still loves her, but he wants to divorce her anyway. So the Levush thought that that shouldn't be effective for the full functionality of a get. It shouldn't allow her to marry other men. It should just separate her from him. So that was quite a chiddush. Maram Lublin quotes that, and others understood that that was certainly not the case. Avinu Behuda in his Tshuvas, so he explains that this is not a necessary clause for the viability of the get, but that Dibra Kasa Behova, the Torah is describing what normally is the case, and this is not the only situation in which a get is functional. The Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Gerushin, so he refers to the idea of Lo Simcha Chein as, sounds like the way he phrases it, that that is the basis for the crucial idea of the need for Ratzon in a get. The idea that a get is only effective when the husband wishes to carry it out. The idea that there is an absolute necessity that the husband is desirous of giving the get, that it has to be beratzon. So that which is so crucial, the Gemara isn't very clear on where that comes from, but in the Rambam it's front and center, the first halach in Hilchos Gerushin, and it sounds like he gets it from here, that im lo simcha chein. And when the Rambam talks about the idea that despite this requirement, it's still possible that sometimes a Beis Din can be kofa a get if the halacha demands it. So there he explains that it is the inner pintel yid, that the fact that even if somebody is refusing to give a get, but if the halacha does require it, so the fact that everyone deep down wants to do the right thing, that's what allows the Beis Din to compel it. But the Rambam has a requirement that others didn't agree with, that he still has to say Rotza Ani. And some explain that that's because there is still this din of Ratzon, and that maybe that's because of this phrase here of Mlosim Sochein. And it may be that this is also referring to the marriage itself, and that becomes an important detail because the idea that Ratzon is so crucial in the process of the get, so is the idea that the husband has to want to give the get or has to want to get divorced. That becomes a very crucial detail because often he's willing to do one and not the other. So when the husband is refusing to give a get, but he is willing to be divorced, he's just holding out the get because he's trying to extract some kind of concession. So that's very often the situation that we have nowadays. So that may be an important detail. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he's not willing to rely on this lamaisa, but he says that al pi svari, he thinks it makes sense that in such a situation it should be possible for a Beis Din to be kofa a get, because there the ratzon to be divorced is there. It's not something that he wants to stay in the marriage, just not willing to give the get. So the idea that it has to be beratzon, that refers to the idea of being divorced, not necessarily the actual handing over of the get. Again, he wasn't willing to rely on that lamaisa, but he thought, al pi svara, that makes sense. And the inverse of that is you could have somebody who is willing to give the get, but isn't willing to get divorced. How could you have such a situation? So let's say somebody makes a pre-commitment to give a get, but when the time comes, he's not looking to get divorced. So Reb Zalman Nechemya wrote in one of his essays that wouldn't be good. That would be called ones al pi atzmo. So that's very important also, because Reb Zalman Nechemya is one of the co-authors of the Beis Din of America prenup, and as we discussed in Shir, so that does not function on the premise that there is a monetary penalty. That functions on a different understanding, that the money that is supplied during that time is part of a natural consequence of remaining married. And that's a crucial distinction, because as we see, Rav Zalman Nechemya himself understands that an ones that comes because one pre-committed himself to give the get, if he wasn't willing to give the get at that time, so that wouldn't be considered ratzon if the person is not willing to get divorced. So that's the other side of the same equation of what Rav Moshe was writing, that the willingness has to be on the divorce, and that's perhaps what the Rambam is indicating by tying the ratzon to this language of imlosim sochein, that the ratzon specifically reflects the fact that he doesn't want to stay in the marriage. Okay, so then what happens if he's not happy, he doesn't want to stay in the marriage? So kimotzo be'erbos davar, so that's what the Mishnah talks about, those three opinions, what is this motzo be'erbos davar, v'chasav la sefer krisus. So he writes for her this bill of divorce. So v'chasav la, so it sounds like he has to write it, but that's actually not the case. He doesn't have to write it itself. The Mishnah in Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph says that anyone is kosher to write a get, as long as if it's a cheresh shot to a katan, somebody has to be standing on top of him. But basically anyone is kosher to write. It doesn't have to be the husband himself. It does need to have his tzivui. And Tosfos and Daf Chav Beis explains that that's not for the purposes of shlichus, but that's because of the din of lishma that we'll talk about in a second. So we need to establish that it's written lishma, so therefore it needs the tzivoy habal, and it's a machlokus and Tosfos and Ervin and Tosfos over there about whether if you don't have that tzivoy, whether that's pasul min haTorah or midrabanan. So here the Torah writing that the get has to be written, so v'chasav. So is that just a hechsher, basically, that in order to have a get, so it has to be written? Or is that a part of the gerushin process? The Torah describing how the divorce happens, v'chasav l'sefer krisus v'nasam bi'ada, so it's written and it's given? Or is that just telling us you have to write a get, so you'll have a get, and then the divorce happens through the giving? So it sounds like it's actually part of the process, because the Gemara on Daf Yutes says you can't have any interruption between the writing and the giving. So, for example, if there's something that has to happen in between, let's say you write the get on something that's mechubar lekarka, and then you're going to have to disconnect it in between. So that's a problem if there's a stage that has to happen in between. So then that seems to indicate that there has to be one straight process from the writing and the giving. So it seems like the writing is a part of the process of the divorce itself. Also, we find that there are a number of dinim at least according to some opinions, that consider the woman to be a grusha ready from the time of the ksiva, which Rav Schechter has an essay about this, quoting many points from Rav Soloveitchik, which also indicates that the ksiva already is the beginning of the divorce. And then the pasuk says la, so this is one of the makaros, that there's a din of lishma. I say one of the makaros because there's probably really two separate dinim of lishma, maybe la and sefer krisus, because there's a din of lishma that it has to be l'shem gerushin, and that could be what's derived from sefer krisus, and a din of lishma that it has to be l'shem the isha and the isha. So it seems like there's really two dinim of lishma. So we have lishma in many areas of halacha, that there has to be, when you create a chefza, so you create a sefer Torah, create tzitzis, you have a karban, so then that has to be lishma. And that also, part of the maisa gerushin is that it's happening with that awareness. So that's a different aspect of lishma, which reflects itself. For example, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Gerushin in Parak Vav, in Halacha Chaf Aleph, that there's a notion of bittul haget, that if the husband cancels the get, so then after that, it's no good. So once you have, that can't be brought back. So once you have that, so you don't have that kind of concept by a Sefer Torah, let's say. A Sefer Torah was written Lishma, so once it's Lishma, then Lishma is there. You can't be Mevatel Lishma afterwards. So that seems to indicate that there is a notion also of the Lishma as part of the process, which can be canceled and undone, which is separate from the Lishma that creates the Chavtza. Rav Shimon Shkab points out that the fact that the Lishma here in the creation of the get is also a part of the process of the Gerushin itself, you also see that from the very beginning of the Masechta, the first Mishnah, which talks about the idea that you need testimony on B'fonei Nechta, B'fonei Nechtam, and the Gemara says that that's there to determine that, at least one possibility to determine that the get was written lishma, and the Gemara discusses that this is davar shebe'erva and should require two edim. So the Achronim ask, the Torah's Gittin and others ask, that what do you mean it's davar shebe'erva? So the relationship is a davar shebe'erva, but here we're talking about the get. So we just want to establish that the get was written lishma. So why is that a davar shebe'erva? So Rav Shimon Shkap and others explain that the lishma writing of the get is a part of the process of the gerushin itself. So therefore, that is what undoes the relationship. So that is itself considered to be a davar shebe'erva, and that's why even establishing that the get was written lishma could be considered a davar shebe'erva that should require two edim. So then it goes on to say, the pasuk goes on to say, to say for krisus, kashav l'say for krisus. So there are a number of halachas that are derived from that. So the Gemara says in Daf Chaf Aleph Mibbeis that if there's a kind of condition that makes it restrictive forever, so then that's not krisus. So if he says almanash shalot tishti yayin, if he says that there's a condition that she can't drink wine forever, she can't do something else forever, so then that's no good, because then she's always tied down because of that condition. And the Gemara says in Daf Pei Beis Amud Beis that if there's somebody who's excluded from this, from the heter, that there's one guy she's not allowed to marry, so then that's also not a full krisus. It's a machlokus in the Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Lamed Zayin, if you get the same effect with a tanai. So if you say that the almanas, that you can't marry this one guy, so then maybe that should be good, because that's a tanai rather than an exclusion in the krisus. That's a machlokus in Shulchan Aruch, if that's a problem. And then you have the very significant word here, v'nason biyada. So first of all, v'nasan biyada, so the Gemara tells us that it doesn't mean it has to be literally in her hand, it can be also in her chatzar, and Rashi explains that it doesn't mean literally in her hand because of the way the words are structured here, that if it had been literally in her hand, Rashi says it could have said biyada titain, that it should be specifically in her hand. So apparently it doesn't mean literally in her hand, it means in her rishos, it could be in her chatzar. But we need this nesina. So what exactly is nesina? So that was a huge topic in halacha. So does that mean that we have to be makne to her? Is that what it's telling us, that you should transfer it to her property? So to say that that's got to be a kinyan, so that's very complicated conceptually. for a number of reasons. So first of all, we know that at least min haTorah, it's possible, whether it's mutter or not, but it's at least possible min haTorah to divorce a woman bal karcha. So if that's the case, so how could it be that it requires a kinyan? Because you can't be makna somebody something bal karcha. So if divorce requires being makna her a get, and it's possible to be divorcing her bal karcha, so then it seems like it can't involve being makna her anything. Also, she shouldn't have any ability to acquire anything while she's still married. And the Gemara has a whole explanation of how the whole concept of chatzer could even work here, because normally whatever she would acquire through a chatzer should automatically be acquired by her husband also. So the Gemara says here, chatzer v'yada, git v'yada, boyin ke'echad, that she's able to somehow magically acquire her independence and acquire her get at the same time, which is itself a fascinating idea. And there's an additional problem with the idea of a kinyan, because the Gemara says that it's possible to write a get on something that's asur b'hana. So it's a big question, lahalacha, if it's possible to own something that is asur b'hana. And even if it is possible to own something that's asur b'hana, is a discussion in the Marcheshes and another svarim, whether that's a possibility. But even if that is possible, then it's a further question if you can transact, if you can be makna something that is asur b'hana. So that's a big problem then. So if you can have a get on something that's asur b'hana and you have to be makna, so how's that going to work? So there are a few approaches to this. There's some, like the Sefer Hafla, who say that that's a chiddush haTorah, that there are problems here in being makne this, but that's what the pasuk is describing. So it's a chiddush haTorah that through this you are able to be makne the get, and it works despite all these problems. And the Ktso says a big chiddush here, where the Ktso says that you don't need to actually be makna the get, and that's what the Torah is describing here, that you need a nesina and not a kinyan. So it doesn't matter that she doesn't have the ability to be makna something. And he explains that that whole notion of gita v'yada boyin ke'achad and chetzer v'yada boyin ke'achad, that wouldn't work for a kinyan chetzer for other things. It's a specific halacha by get because of this unique requirement of nesina rather than kinyan. And it's also, can explain the other questions also. It doesn't matter that it's asur b'hana, that this is all reflective of the fact that that's the, what the halacha requires of the get, a nesina rather than a kinyan. There are others who have additional explanations that this has to do with the whole, it's not even necessarily unique to a get, but that it has to do with the way that shtar kinyan works, that the shtar itself only comes along with the kinyan, with the object that's being the knes. So it doesn't matter if the shtar is something that is acquirable by itself, because the shtar is affecting the transaction, and then it comes along with the transaction. But it could be that that would apply in other such contexts also. Rav Shimon Shkap has a discussion about this, that maybe a get could be viewed in that sense, that the transaction, in this case the kinyan of the gerushin, it's a whole discussion also if we view gerushin itself as a kinyan. It's what it sounds like from the Mishnah in the beginning of Kiddushin. But the process here is happening, that's the main focus of what the shtar is trying to do, and the shtar comes along mevela, so it doesn't matter that it doesn't necessarily have transferability in and of itself. So this whole question of whether you need a kinyan or not, so it also cuts the other way. So it's a big machlokes, what if you have kinyanim that don't necessarily reflect a physical act of nesina? So there was a discussion about the kinyan agav. Is a kinyan agav effective in the context of a get? There's a gemara that sounds like that. It's machlokes rishonim, if that's really what it's talking about. Is it talking about agav? Is it talking about something else? So this was a big discussion in the achronim. It's the flip side of this. So one question is, if you're handing over a get, does it need to have a kinyan? And the flip side is, if you are doing something that's a kinyan, but it doesn't have the physicality of handing over the get, so does that work? So that was itself a big machlokas also And it reflects this issue, and that's also why there are certain chumras lahalacha. So, for example, Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a chumra that the get has to be contained completely within the woman's hand, because even though when you acquire an object, you don't necessarily have that requirement, but that's not the case here. It's not just about a kinyan, it's about fulfilling the literal reading of this pasuk, and that was a big discussion whether that was accepted or not. And also discussion of what actually satisfies the standard of Nesina. So Nezer and others have tshuvas about if he lets it fall into her hand, is that considered to be an act of Nesina? And there are many discussions, I won't go into all the details now, but many discussions as to what satisfies this description. And it reflects the fact that the pasuk is using this language here, and it's not necessarily about a kinyan, but it's about a nesina, perhaps, which may be different in terms of its details than a kinyan, and that could affect the halacha as well. The Rashbam, in his commentary to Bava Basra and Daf Mem Ches, so he seems to understand that the language of nesina is the source for the halacha of Ratzon. We had mentioned earlier that the Rambam's position was and the Rashbam's position seems to be that it's v'nosan, that if the Torah says you should do this, so then it sounds like you are choosing to do it, and that you're not being forced to do it, and that's the halacha of Ratzon. So that may itself be significant, and there are some who suggest that the point we made before, the question of what is it that has to be baratzon, is it the giving of the get or the divorce itself, that point we mentioned before from Rav Moshe and others, that may depend on the Rambam and the Rashbam, the Sefer Gufo Shel Get that has that discussion, that maybe if you say that the source is Mlosim Sochein, like the Rambam, then it's about the desire to divorce. And if you say the source is like the Rashbam, then it's about Finosan, so then it's about a desire to give the get. So that could have very significant ramifications. So the pasuk ends, V'shulcha mibeiso, that he should send her from his house. So what does that mean? So here, so the Gemara explains in Yevamos, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, that it doesn't work if she doesn't understand that she has to leave. If she's going to come back, if there's a lack of understanding that that's what this means, so then the divorce is not going to be effective. But the way the Rambam phrases it in Hilchos Gerushin and Perek Aleph Halacha Hey, it's to make the point that not that the get is not effective without Vishulcha Mibeiso. He writes clearly that the get is effective as soon as she takes it, but that then there's another step of Vishulcha Mibeiso, that she has to be sent out, and if she stays there, so then it is considered to be that he remarries her and that she needs another get. So, okay, the next pasuk tells us, v'yatz mibeiso v'holcha v'hais lishacher. So the Torah is continuing the story here. So she left his house, and then she goes, she marries somebody else. And the Netziv describes here that there is a message here of the Torah's teaching Derech Eretz, that she only goes to somebody else after Yitzhiya Mibeso. And he discusses that this means that even though she knew she was getting divorced, but it's not appropriate for her to be thinking about marrying anybody else or taking steps towards marrying anybody else until after there's been a formal divorce. The Torah is teaching Derech Eretz here. That's a part of that message. And here, V'yotza V'haisa, so there's also a Hekesh. The Gemara tells us this is the source for Kedusha Eshtar. So we don't normally use Kedusha Eshtar nowadays. The Ksuba is not a Eshtar Kedushin. The Ksuba serves a different purpose. It's a whole discussion whether maybe a Ksuba can be a backup Eshtar if there's a problem with the ring, but normally we do Kedusha Kesef. But theoretically, the first Mishnah in Kedushin says that Shtar is one of the methods of Kedushin, and the Gemara learns it out from the Hekesh of Yotza V'Haisa. So just like you have the possibility of having divorce, you only have the possibility of divorce through Shtar, so too there's a possibility, even though we don't use it, of a marriage through Shtar. So that's one of the three methods of Kedushin. And then the pasuk tells us that the next marriage doesn't work out either. So Usneya Haisha Achron. So now she's even worse off with this guy. So the first guy, this guy hates her. So the second guy sends her away. Or maybe he dies. So then what happens? So then the last pasuk tells us, Lo sucho by la harishana shesholcha lashuv lakachta lios lo isha achrei asher hutama kiso eva hi lifnei Hashem. Lo sachti asaret asher Hashem lakacha nosen locha nachla. So she's not allowed to go back to the first husband. So this is the halacha of machzir grushaso. So a husband whose wife marries somebody else in between is not allowed to remarry his divorced wife. If he's a Kohen, so then it wouldn't matter. He can't remarry her no matter what. But if he's not a Kohen, so then he could theoretically remarry his divorced wife, but not if she marries somebody else in between. So why not? So as the Ramban explains, that this would be a way of essentially legitimizing wife swapping. So you could have couples who would just want to trade spouses, and they would go back and forth and marry and divorce and marry and divorce, and therefore the Torah puts a stop on that. And that's what Rav Shamshal first discusses here also, is this would be essentially adultery under the pretense of legality, that they would be able to just go back and forth in and out of marriage, and it would have the effect of adultery, but it would have the pretense of being a formal marriage, and that would undermine the whole concept, the whole notion that we have of commitment. And we said before from the Rambam and Ravuchim, the whole idea that that's what divorce is supposed to, divorce through some kind of a process, that it should be somewhat of an effort, is meant to convey, it's supposed to be the other side of the commitment of marriage. So to be able to go back and forth, even if one were to go through the whole process, so that would undermine that. And Rav Hirsch also comments that that's why the pasuk says, Toeva hi lifnei Hashem, that this is a disgrace, an abomination in front of God, because people will think it's okay, but Hashem sees what it really is. He understands that that's what's going on, and that that's the whole nature of this fake veneer of legitimacy on what essentially is an immoral relationship, and that's the thrust of what this pasuk is conveying. And it's very noteworthy, and we'll mention this as a closing point, that here we are in Elul. So the Gemara, towards the end of Yuma, on Daf Pei Vav Mid Beis, so the Gemara uses this din of Machzir Grushaso, to emphasize just how wonderful tshuva is. The Gemara says that you see gedola tshuva, that tshuva is great, that it's able to override alosase, because here we have this din of machzir grushaso. But the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which talks about if you have somebody whose divorced wife goes off and is mezana with somebody else, so you wouldn't be able to take her back, and yet Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to take back the Jewish people even after they sin. So the Shem Yishmuel quotes from his father, from the Avnei Nezer, that there's something here that doesn't totally fit, because normally the halacha is that, as counterintuitive perhaps as it sounds, that the din of machzir grushaso only applies if the person actually marries somebody else, if the woman actually marries somebody else. But if the wife is just a mezana after she divorces, if she is mezana while she's still married to the husband, then she becomes aser to him. But if the man divorces his wife and then she's mezana with somebody, so then he actually is allowed to remarry her. It's only if she actually marries somebody else. So the language of the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that the Gemara quotes sounds like she's just mezana with somebody else, so it doesn't totally fit. So how exactly does that match with this din? So he suggests there that this relates to what the Gemara says, that if a person sins, it sins again, so nasan lo keheter. So the normal understanding of that is that a person who sins repeatedly, so it becomes to him as if what he's doing is permitted. And he explains it a little bit more homiletically and mystically, that when a person sins repeatedly, so it's like hutar, it's that the kesher between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has become undone, And the more he keeps doing that, the more he repeatedly sins. So he undoes his kesher with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he ultimately goes over to the other side. Then he creates a relationship with other forces. And that's essentially like the situation of Machzor Grusasa, where somebody has not just left her first husband, but has actually created a bond with another husband, and therefore shouldn't be able to go back to the first husband. And so even though that's not what's obviously described in the Pasuk, but he says that's essentially what Chazal are explaining with that kind of imagery, that that's the effect of repeated sin. And essentially that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was promising us, that tshuva is capable not only of allowing us to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu after we stumble and after we make a mistake, but even after such repeated sins that it's created a pattern, so much so that Chalila, it's as if our allegiance has completely flipped over to other forces. It's still possible to come back. It's still possible to return. And that's the incredible power of tshuva. That's what the Gemara is saying, that essentially it's as if it thwarts, as if it defies this halacha of machzor grushaso, that even kiviyachol, when somebody has gone so far in their straying from the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that it's as if they've actually formed a bond with other forces, but still the Kadosh Baruch Hu was willing to take them back. And the Gemara ultimately says that the real power of tshuva is from tshuva me'ava, and that's the type of tshuva that a person expresses when he loves the Kadosh Baruch Hu so much that he wants to take all of his experiences and harness them towards a positive relationship of exploring the Torah and growing through everything that he's learned. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that he's willing to take us back with all of that, and that's a tremendous bracha. So the Aliyah here teaches us about the power of commitment, about the fragility of relationships, about how important it is to invest in commitments. The whole idea of having gittin before kiddushin in the order of Shas. So the joke is, the cynical joke, as they say, hikdim refuah lemachla, that the remedy is before the disease, kind of a cynical comment, but we could also understand in a less cynical way that the more we appreciate just what can go wrong in a relationship, so the less likely it is to go wrong, and the more protected the relationship itself is, in the spirit of what Sefer Achinuch and the Abravanel wrote, that in a sense just the awareness of this possibility is what could lead to a strengthening of the value of marriage and the potential for marriage. And so too, as the comparison to our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that the awareness of just how fragile things could be and how serious a commitment is required, and these last psukim telling us about how the commitment has to be genuine and can't be abused through the appearance of commitment just being there as a cover for anything but. And the more we recognize that and we're willing to allow a Kadosh Baruch Hu's bracha to actually manifest itself, and that incredible statement that the Gemara in Yuma has, that he's willing to override this issue, so to speak, of machzor grushaso through the power of the tshuva, is a tremendous promise and a tremendous source of inspiration for us as we continue in the days of Elul and as we look towards a new zman. So very exciting as we consider the beginning of a new Zman next week with this in mind, and all of this should be a source of inspiration to us, and we should continue to see a promise of growth and aliyah in the days ahead. Should have a wonderful week.